One. Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. Woo-hoo! It is September, which means that we are, about 45 days or so away from the start of the college basketball season. And it's another Hoops HD podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, with a full panel of Hoops HD experts here tonight. To my sides up top here, we got John Titel and the puppet David Griggs, unfortunately, back.
What? No, I, what do you mean, unfortunate? It's great that I'm here.
Yeah.
I love being here.
Right. Unfortunately, what is unfortunate is that the sound effects are still not working as they have not been working all summer. We will hopefully have them by the start of the regular season or our preseason shows. Right below me in the center square, we have John Stalica at his sides, Joby Fortson and Mike Cha, Dave Dorman down in the bottom road there. I think that's everybody. We've got a topic for tonight too as well, and we want to actually discuss tonight not what the big news from today, which was that Memphis' decision came down from their penalties from the panel, and they got a big, giant, tiny little slap on the wrist. But we do want to go ahead, Dave.
A big, giant bygones be bygones ruling, and let's move on. I'm glad. I was a little concerned. I thought we might be eliminating them from the survival board tonight.
Well, this is good news for teams like LSU, Kansas, and Titel, your Arizona teams, whose decisions are still pending out there as well. Give Memphis a slap, let's give everyone a slap on the wrist and just move on with our lives, I guess. That's the decision of this panel, and that might be what it is. But we want to discuss the transfer rules tonight. There's been some major changes very recently. And Griggs, I know you've been studying it. I hate to give you the floor, but why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the way the transfer rules work?
Well, okay. So in effect now, there's essentially two big things that are in effect now, and one that's being proposed that will likely be going into effect. One is what is essentially the transfer window. Under the old rules with the transfer portal, I should say, since the portal came into existence, any player could go into it at any time. And once they were in it, they had blanket permission to contact from anybody at that was an NCAA member, Division 1, 2, 3, whatever. Now, players can only enter the portal during a transfer window. And essentially, that transfer window opens in men's basketball the Monday after the regular season ends. So the day after Selection Sunday, and it's open for 60 days.
I've got here for next year, it's going to be Monday, March 13th through Thursday, May 11th will be the college basketball transfer window.
Yes. And that is when you go in there. Now, on May 12th, if a player wants to go into the portal, they cannot. If they were to transfer and not be in the portal, they'd be subject to the old transfer year in residency rule. By that, I mean, when I say year in residency, it means that you have to basically sit out a year at your new university before you're eligible to play. So that is one of the biggest things. I think one of the concerns was the number of players that went into the portal and did not get any D1 or D2 offers. And it was hundreds. It was more than 500 players that had a school, had a team to play on, had a scholarship, entered the portal and ended up with nothing. A lot of them wanted to return to their previous school when they had no offers and there was no spot for them. They'd already recruited something else. So I think that's part of the reason. Another reason is I think it was just really difficult and stressful to manage. A lot of coaches, a lot of administrators, these kids are going to the portal. These kids are going to the portal before the season ends. So that's one of the big changes. I guess we're going to get into whether we like that or not. Another proposal that is coming down, and I do think this will pass, is that there will be unlimited transfer opportunities for all sports so long as players enter the transfer window when it's open.
Okay, but right now, if a player wants to transfer a second time, even if they're within the window, they would have to technically sit out the year, correct?
They do not.
Okay, no, but
oh, a second time,
unless it's a graduate student transfer.
Yeah, so unless it's a graduate student, or if they're coming from junior college, that's they wouldn't be in the portal because they're not coming from the NCAA. So the unlimited transfer proposal is probably going to pass. Another thing that is likely to pass, and again, this is the legislation, and this is kind of interesting for under the radar schools. If someone has transferred from an NCAA or NAIA school, so essentially a 4 years, anybody that's not a JUCO transfer, when they arrive at their new institution, that institution is obligated to provide them with a scholarship, and they will, and they don't have to offer them a roster spot, but they are one of the 13 counters. You're allowed 13 men's basketball scholarships. This person would count as one of the 13, even if they quit the team, even if they flunk out of the institution. You are essentially on the hook for them for the remainder of their eligibility clock, which you have 5 years to play four seasons. Until that five-year clock runs out, you have to pay for their school, and they're on their counter. I think the logic behind this was a lot of players who transferred got to their new schools and were being forced out, or their scholarships weren't being renewed, and they were kind of ending up getting voted off the island with nowhere to go. The NCAA SAC in particular said that is grossly unfair. If someone comes in and they have no more transfer opportunities, the school should be obligated to pay for them. So that's kind of where we are.
Let me throw this out there here right then. You just said, well, we're going to go to unlimited transfers.
Yes.
Is this going to be a temporary rule that goes away with that when we get unlimited transfer chances?
I don't know. Okay. I don't think it will.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this is just going to be a win for the student or for the players, student athletes in all sports, that they have the opportunity to transfer if they want to, but they do not have to. Okay.
I know you just threw a lot of information out there. So let me kind of open it up here a little bit to everybody and throw a few questions out there. First of all, I think that the beginning of where all these changes came from was what you said. We have hundreds of players that tried to transfer, ended up going nowhere. And Tytel, how big of a problem is that? And do you think that these changes are enough to maybe keep us from a situation we had with kids that thought they'd get a spot in another school and it's just not available?
I mean, if your question is like, how big a problem is it for the 800 guys who couldn't find a place to go? I would say it's a very big freaking problem, frankly, yeah. But they should have, I kind of want to put the blame on them in terms of like, I understand if you're in a bad situation or a coaching change or whatever, like there's plenty of legitimate reasons to leave a school, but I would like to think that like you have a good lead or have a backup plan. Otherwise you're really like up a creek. As far as like fixing it, I mean, I hope it helps. I mean, this is transfers are not just a thing of like little schools going to little schools. I mean, the defending national champs, the Jayhawks, they brought in Kevin McCullough Jr. from Texas Tech. They already had Joseph Yusufu from Drake, like big time teams who win championships need transfers to get that done. So I'll be interested to see what kind of, how it fixes things or how it affects things going forward.
Right. That's, you know, it's a really interesting point here that you just made though, that big time teams need these transfers. And Joby, we are in a completely new era now where we had a chance to speak to, I don't know if you saw our interview, we had to speak to Barry Hinson the other day, who's the, who's an associate athletic director at Oklahoma State. But we've mentioned this, that you don't just recruit freshmen anymore. You recruit the transfer portal even more so than we did before.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. And you also have to recruit your own players again.
You do.
As it were.
Great point.
So this is, I think there's a stabilization factor. I think this is a good step. And I will slightly disagree with John respectfully on one component.
Okay.
In that I think in a lot of cases, these transfers, they're literally run off by the coach. They are either because they're not good enough, or they're sometimes they're, you know, disruptive in the locker room, but usually it's because the coach misevaluated them during recruitment and they just aren't as good as what the coach thought when they brought them in. And thus they are run off. And all of a sudden they're left with no home. They think, oh, well, yeah, the coach doesn't want me. I'm out of here. And then they don't have an education anymore. And that's the true tragedy. That's why I like the idea of the extended scholarship once you land. Of course, I actually have advocated on this show a lot of times that the extended scholarship should happen the minute they walk on campus.
Thank you. Yeah.
I think it should be, you know, a 4 to 5 year deal. You know, you make a bad decision as a coach, if as long as the kid has kept good academic standing and hasn't committed criminal offenses, then I think they should be, their scholarship should be a 4 to 5 year contract, just as the letter of intent is a contract that the school is able to take advantage of and the kid should be able to take advantage of. It's a joint, it should last more than the year to year. And that I think would really help with some of the problems here. And hey, if the kid, you know, he takes up a spot on your, takes up a spot on your 13, if that creates a problem where there are rosters with only 8 spots because a bunch of kids decided to just go at the academic route, then we can work with it once there's an actual problem. But until then, I'd like to see the balance between school and player. But the upshot is, on these rules, I think they're a step in the right direction, which, wow, that's a real big achievement for the NCAA, who hasn't made a step in the right direction on anything lately.
Right. And you know, Joe, I got to say, though, you know, we're talking about a 13 scholarships for the basketball team. You're not seeing more than 7 or 8, maybe 9 on the occasional team playing. So you got those spots at the end of the bench that are doing nothing anyhow. So why not guarantee these scholarships for these kids? I'm agreeing with you.
And the one thing is, you do have schools like Stanford, who, if I were, or even the Ivies, said, I'm not really playing. They're offering me a spot. Okay, I'll go. And then they quit the team so they can get the nice Harvard degree.
Joby, Ivy League schools don't offer athletic scholarships, do they?
Yeah. But you get the spot in the school.
Yeah.
So,
So is that the way it works? So if you're transferring to Princeton, you're transferring to Penn, you at least have to be guaranteed a spot in the school as long as you're academically eligible, Griggs?
That is an excellent question. I don't know the answer. I didn't even think about it until you just now mentioned that they do not offer scholarships so far. And another thing I'm not certain of is some of the sports that
they offer grants and aid, though. I know that's not tied together. I mean, like, the entire Vanderbilt baseball team is based on grants and aid, even though it's not an athletic scholarship.
It's a need-based thing more so than,
One of the things, the way it was explained, or at least the way I understood it when I was reading about it, was that for sports other than basketball, like your non-headcount sports, what's called your equivalency sports, where you might have people on a partial scholarship, a half scholarship, a quarter scholarship, whatever it is they are offered when they arrived, they are guaranteed at least that the rest of the way. Did that make any sense at all? That made perfect sense to me, but okay. I don't know if I explained it very well.
Well, the half,
but we're a basketball site, so
half scholarships are more common in other sports than Salika, let me get your thoughts on what we've been discussing here as well, and the way that these transfer rules will change. Do you think there's something more the NCAA could be doing, or is this the best step at this moment?
I think it's fair to point out that a conference like the Pac-12, for example, they've already gone the route of pretty much guaranteeing 4-year scholarships, and I think in some cases 5-year scholarships, at least while we're trying to get the COVID year window out of the way. I think a conference like the Big Ten is also proposed, for example, trying to get that same 4 to 5 year window in as well. Now, as far as our own school, for example, here at Xavier, one of the examples of a transfer we saw last year was Dewan Odom, who left the school not because he was dissatisfied with his former or current one, but because Jonas Hayes, who was the interim head coach when Xavier won the NIT, he ended up taking the head job at Georgia State. So at least this way, he doesn't have to sit out a year having to get that year of residency in. Mm-hmm. So in some respects, it's good that at least for now, we're at least seeing a transfer without penalty right here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mike, let me ask you this. Let me go back to some of the rule change that's not in place yet, but coming that Griggs was explaining to us. That is this idea that a player will now potentially, if this rule passes, be able to transfer as many times as they want. You could literally play 4 years, 4 different schools, potentially if you have a medical redshirt year or something, maybe even 5 years, 5 different schools. Is that the good thing or a bad thing here that we let that these kids transfer around this much?
I don't really see that as a good thing. I mean, you transfer once, maybe twice at the most, but you know, like, I know theoretically you could transfer, you know, four times once every year, but I don't recommend that. I think usually you shouldn't transfer unless you have something else lined up for you. You just don't want to transfer randomly and then you find yourself left out in the cold.
Well, but let's say you are a player that's definitely going to be on a team. You're maybe not a star, but you're a guy who's good enough to play in a Power Five team, and easily you'll be able. You're not going to have a problem being one of the 800 kids that sits in the transfer portal. You know, is there an argument that this is good for these kids? That hey, listen, the coaches can move around four different schools in 4 years. Why shouldn't we let the kids do it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we put it that way. Yeah, it's good for the kids that, you know, they have more freedom, they have more sense of movement. But you know, generally, you want to make sure that you have something lined up for you. But yeah, I mean, if you want to transfer 3-4 times, you know, more power to you.
Did Aaron Judge just hit that home run, or we got to get the update here? Walked. Okay.
Yeah, John, thank you for the update. I turned on the MLB Network. I had to put it on mute while I was being interrogated here.
Well, I'm seeing the game in the corner of your screen there, Mike.
Four walks for Judge. I'm not pitching to him.
Yeah, Ty, what do you think about what Mike just said? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that we maybe having kids that could play four different schools in 4 years?
I'm a traditionalist, so I would vote bad. I believe in you find the coach and the program that's a good fit for you. You sign your letter of intent. They give you the scholarship and the books and the housing and the tuition and everything. And you repay them by playing your heart out for 4 years or go pro early if you're that good. I know it's an outdated way of thinking. I understand why there are situations where you would want to go to a different school, because there's a lot of good reasons, like Joby was saying, that somebody would want a good school. But in short, I do not like it.
You don't like it. Go ahead, Griggs.
Well, I was just kind of speculating. Did anybody have any thoughts or guesses on how this will affect the game? As recently as 10 years ago, like in the Hoops HD era, when we started doing this, I used to think, and I think we all did, that basketball was a transfer-heavy sport because you had 13 guys on a roster, 7 or 8 played, 5 or 6 didn't, and of the 5 or 6 didn't, as many as three might look to transfer. and we considered that transfer-heavy 10 years ago. Holy crap! Like, more than – it is not uncommon to lose more than half your team to transfers every year now. And especially the under-the-radar schools that you and I and, you know, Stalika, well, a lot of you, you know, come on the under-the-radar schools. How is this going to impact the game? And does it impact the power conferences differently than under-the-radar? I just don't know what the future is going to look like. I've always been for players' rights. I thought the transfer rules were a little too stringent at first. But when you see 800 players end up with nothing, and when you see schools like St. Peter's have a banner year and lose their top 6 players, you're wondering, is this good for the longevity of the game? I know that's kind of the question that you asked. I'll ask the same question a little differently. What is the game going to look like now?
I'm going to give a contrarian answer to probably what most in the panel will say, which is, I actually think that teams that are able to develop players and keep players, that recruiting your own team, will have a big advantage, not just a little advantage, a big advantage over the conglomeration of all-star, quote-unquote all-star players and all-star talent that might come in. Think of it in the one-and-done sort of phase, which I think will be gone soon. I think one-and-done will be replaced by transfer. Yeah, you know, transfer heavy schools, hypothetically a school like Kentucky or Duke or et cetera, could all of a sudden become a big magnet. But I think chemistry matters. And so a team that is able to keep their core together, I think will serve themselves well. Griggs, you're exactly right that I fear for the up and coming St. Peter's of the world that are under the radar. I think they're in
Murray
trouble.
State, I know, and lost everybody.
But I think a lot among the major conferences, I think a lot of them, you're going to see some teams that will be surprisingly strong and programs that will be surprisingly strong because they know how to develop talent, build talent, and more importantly, keep their core together. And it may not be, like I said, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas. You know, it might not be those teams that we automatically think of. It might be an Iowa State or something like that.
Yeah, and I love what you said earlier, Joby, actually, that you're now, we're now in an era where you basically have
points, Joby.
Yeah, you have to recruit 13 players every year. You've got to recruit freshmen, you've got to recruit transfers, and you've got to recruit your own kids. You've got to, it's no longer I need one or two spots to fill. And this could be crazy for coaches going forward. I don't know. It's almost scary. Dorman, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree with you, Chad. It becomes scary at some points. But when coaches can leave jobs 1 year and go get paid, and I'm fine with it. I'm not knocking them for going and working to get their family taken care of. But if that kid in that program that was recruited, the coach leaves, and that kid doesn't feel wanted or part of the program anymore, he has got to have the ability to leave the school and not sit out a year. And that's why these rules are better than what we've had in the past. And it might not even be the coach. Sometimes kids need to move closer to home and be closer to their moms and mothers and fathers. Sometimes they need to get away from their hometown, to get away from their posses and their friends and everything, and get, you know, start really working. But the kids need to be able to at least move at least once. It's not right to make these kids hostage to the schools because a coach left them high and dry after 1 year. So these rules are much better than what we've had in the past.
Yeah, it's Sleeka, that's a great point also, though, that hey, we're finally giving these kids some real rights.
Yeah, that's going to be – I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, John.
Oh, I thought – yeah, we were bringing up a little bit earlier as far as, let's say, transfers being able to, was it follow their coaches, for example, not have to sit out the year. But I want to also bring up another point that I also brought up in chat. Think of a team like Creighton, who just 2 years ago went to the first Sweet 16 under Greg McDermott. Now, last year, they were supposed to be in a major rebuild because all the players from that team were all but gone. But last year, because of the transfer portal and Greg McDermott being able to effectively recruit his team, last year they were able to actually get into the NCAA tournament. This year, he's able to recruit just about everybody, plus kid from South Dakota State. Now they're being thought of as potential top 10 team, which would have seemed a little bit laughable when we started the Hoops HD podcast era.
Yeah, Mike, you had a thought also?
Yeah, I was going to say that with the new transfer rules, I think coaches have to really focus on their recruiting strategy instead of saying, oh, I'm going to recruit the number 5 ranked player. You know, focus on I mean, talent, of course, is important, but also focus on, you know, players that really want to be at your school. You know, show them, hey, you know, do you like the campus? Do you feel like, you know, you could be do you feel like you can blend with the student body? You know, give them the whole picture, and, you know, not just instead of just trying to recruit the top players and just, you know, just try to assemble an all-star team. You know, we want to recruit people that really want to be at your school.
Yeah, we do. And I think there's one other layer to all this that we haven't even mentioned yet. Tytel, let me bring you back in on this. And that is all the name, image, and likeness money.
Yeah.
And how that is now also a reason for a kid's transferring. I know Dorman mentioned, hey, be nearer to your family or the coach ride you off. But it's also, hey, I can get a great deal to be on a car commercial over at Georgetown. Why am I playing at, you know, Virginia? Or why am I playing in UMass or whatever?
Well, I would start out by saying, why are you playing at Georgetown if they've lost 20 in a row? But I know that's a separate conversation.
Because you're getting paid all the money.
Is it worth it, Chad, to deal with that stuff? Come on. No, I've just started reaching out to different NIL collectors around the country. And it's really eye-opening. Like, the first guy I talked to was from Illinois. And he said, like, you know, John, like, it's just a new way of thinking. And you might be used to the old days where, like, you had a scholarship. Well, you couldn't even have a part-time job because the NCAA would crack down on you. It's a different world we live in, and guys are getting paid and everybody's doing it, and you have to be competitive and all that stuff. The dollar amounts that are getting thrown around are starting to open my eyes even more. I think Michigan State, they were talking about the goal is to get $50,000 per student athlete. I think Oscar Tshiebwe is getting like 7 figures at Kentucky. The guy at Pitt who founded their collective, I think last year donated $20 million to the athletic department. These are a lot of zeros. And as you correctly point out, Chad, they are going to attract transfers who only care about a lot of zeros.
Right. And I still have a theory. I'm going to see how this, we'll see how this plays out, that we may see more kids foregoing the pros for another year in school because of the money that they can now make, that they would, you know, you can make seven figures. You make 50 grand being at Michigan State at the end of the roster. Why go play on, you know, in Team Tel Aviv or wherever some of these kids end up going for the pro contracts. But Joby, I think you also had a comment or no?
I was just going to say, I completely agree because you're going to see, I mean, can you imagine does Zion Williamson actually stay another year at Duke maybe because he can make $1 zillion off the shoe deal? Who knows? You just don't know. I think your point is very well made. You've already seen it in football to a big degree. Ewers transferring from Ohio State to Texas. That was technically going home, but he wasn't going home. And every Buckeye will scream about it all day long, making Mike extremely happy. The NIL will drive a lot of this in a lot of ways. There's talk that that's one of the reasons why Miami landed maybe the top transfer around, in a lot of ways. So, yeah, we will definitely see how this plays out. It is definitely a new world in that regard.
And I believe Oscar Tshiebwe doesn't play this year at Kentucky if there is no NIL, and he's good for college basketball. I'm not even a Kentucky guy, but he's good for college basketball. He's good. He's great for this season, and he's probably not in college basketball without that rule.
And look at Drew Timmy up at Gonzaga. There's another guy that was on the verge of going pro. Perfect. Even if I don't think he was ready for the pros, he was going to do it. But
great point.
Griggs, did we cover all the areas of the new transfer rules that you hit us with, or is there anything that we missed here?
We've gone over the new rules. I want to ask the panel a question, something that, again, going back to what Barry Hansen said, it's under the radar centric. He said that if he were back at the Missouri Valley, and God, I hope he gets back there someday if he wants to, he wouldn't even recruit freshmen. Because he does not want to be a farm system for the power schools. He would recruit JUCO and 4-4 transfers, meaning NCAA Division I and II transfers for his program in the hopes that, like, getting them there, you don't get them for 4 years, but it's better than having them for just one. Interesting idea. Are you going to start to see under-the-radar programs go that route, not even recruiting freshmen?
Well, the point here being that if they do recruit freshmen and the kid is any good,
he'll leave.
It's so easy for a power conference school with NIL number money to grab him.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on that? Anybody? Throw it open.
I think it's
very interesting strategy.
Yeah.
I think it's already begun. You've seen it. Remind me, was it Texas State who did that? Almost exclusively, and you saw the forced having to do that at UAB in football. The UAB was a bowl team year two in football after suspending their program. The reason why is because they went out and they brought in a ton of JUCO, a ton of transfers. It can work in football. If it can work in football, where you're dealing with 22 different parts and playing and depth issues there on each of those 22 positions, it most certainly can work when you're just trying to find five roles with a few fillers on top.
Well, I think we've probably beat this topic to death now, Griggs.
I think so.
So I guess on that note, I do want to take a chance to go through each of you for any of their final thoughts, either on what we've been discussing tonight or anything else you want to throw out there. Mike, why don't I start with you?
You guys know this, but also in terms of the financial strain, it's a pittance for the universities, especially the major universities. I mean, you're offering a scholarship that's got to last through the entire 4 or 5 year tenure. I mean, for the universities, it's pennies. They make tons of money,
it's pennies. Who do you think the athletic departments write the checks to?
Yeah, we've had this discussion before. It is a check being written, from David Griggs to David Griggs. It's not real money.
I think the college basketball is not going to be the same. It's not going to go back to the way it was. I mean, with the NILs and now the new transfer rules, and I mean, it's good for the players. They have more freedom. They have more options available to them. So just, you really, as a coach, you're a coach, you really have to alter your strategy and to make sure that you recruit guys that really want to be at your school, instead of like, oh, I'm going to focus on getting the number third ranked player or whatever. It's not just getting a bunch of talent. It's, you know, getting, you know, like Joby alluded to, you know, the teams that keep their players the longest are going to develop chemistry and they're going to do the best.
I agree completely as well. Dorman, how about you?
Yep. The transfers are all in place. And the other day we saw college basketball get onto the court. Practice started two nights ago. And that's what I'm excited about. I think we're hopefully out of this little, you know, going back to almost perfect normal basketball as far as college basketball. And now we're going to see the kids take the floor. We're going to get some games coming up next month. Practice starts, and we're going to get to see what's going to make of these teams and put together a tournament again. And college basketball is getting back to basically how we know it. And I'm excited to see what's going to go on the court, and enough of the transfers and the money flying around. It's time to play ball.
Yeah. At the end of the day, at the beginning of every season, we will have rosters set and we will have a season played. And that is the best part about it. I agree with you completely.
Great point.
Sleeka.
This one's going to be directed primarily towards Chad and the Puppet right here, because they've done rivalry podcasts as well as rivalry write-ups. How many times have we discussed the Battle of the Bears between Cal and UCLA? Apparently, this rivalry is such a sacred cow to, I guess, Governor Gavin Newsom out in California, as well as the UC Board of Regents. Apparently, this rivalry is so sacred that this is supposed to be a stumbling point for USC and UCLA wanting to leave the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. What am I missing here?
Well, I'll tell you what the
USC can move without USC can move without problems. UCLA.
Okay. Well, you know, you've got Cal Stanford in the game. You know, I guess Cal UCLA is the other game. I don't know.
Well, I think what the Pac-12 commissioner is missing is the Big Ten would be like, all right, Stanford, come on over.
Who are we up to? Joby.
And it actually make a lot of sense, because Stanford actually gives a new market that UCLA ironically does not, with USC coming aboard.
Oh, the Rose Bowl's
point. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Jammed this year.
Yeah.
Bay Area market.
Because BTN cable rights still matter, even with streaming gaining. My final thought is just an announcement. Later, either this week or early next, we will have on the website a preseason JNG bracket for all of you to look at and criticize, because that's the nature of what you need to do with a bracket, but also to get a feel for what the general statistical underlying leaders going into the season are. It will change day one, but at least we get a nice little fun talking point to start things off.
I don't know, Joby. I took a little quick sneak preview look at some of them, and none of your one seeds have won a single road game yet. I mean, that's pretty offensive to me.
That's where I am with it.
Hey, Gonzaga kept that kid from Waco at home. That's a road
win. Okay. Tytel.
So one player that my good friend Mr. Dorman will not be seeing on the floor anytime soon is Amone Bates over at now Eastern Michigan. He had a little run-in with the authorities a couple weeks ago involving a car he was driving and a gun that was in the car. So I believe he's been suspended from EMU and not sure what his next career move is. As far as what his career move could have been, let me take you back to the long ago year of 2021, when he was a third ranked in the nation high school prospect coming out of Ypsilanti, Michigan, signed with Memphis and played with them for a year. To give you an idea of how good that is, the guy right below him in fourth place, Paolo Banchero, you might have heard of him. He just signed a $50 million contract in July as the number one pick in the NBA draft. Would have, could have, should have.
Tytel, you want to remind us of what your prediction was for Memphis right after they signed Amone Bates for that season?
think I guaranteed that they were going to win a game in the NCAA tourney, and I think they did, and then almost pulled off the upset in the second round.
Okay. But you know, now Eastern Michigan go from my 10th to 11th place pick in the MAC without Imani Bates. So, you know, rough season for them. But, Greg, you want to finish the show off here?
Yeah, I realize, again, kind of getting back to the main topic and with NIL, there's a lot of uncertainty. A lot of people might be anxious. A lot of people that are fans of the sport and longtime fans wonder if it's going to continue to look like the game that they've always loved. A lot of administrators and coaches are trying to figure out how to handle this. Is this good or not? What I can say is that it's, I think that there's some nuance here. While it may not be perfect, it's not as if it were perfect before, because what also wasn't good for the game was players being forced off rosters because of something that Joby alluded to, and then having to go through a rigorous transfer process if they could even find another place to go that involves sitting out for a year. And it also wasn't good where players who would have liked to have transferred because they were miserable were unable to and were essentially just miserable for 3 or 4 years rather than having a good experience. So while there's problems with where we may be going, there's also problems where we were coming from. And I think people kind of overlook that sometimes. I don't know. Like, am I a little disappointed as a fan that we're not going to get to see Murray State and St. Peter's be top 25 teams this year, which they very well could have been? Yes. But do I also like support the players and like the idea that they have a little more freedom now? Yes. Do I think it's problematic that with that freedom, 800 players ended up with no place to go? Yes. We're still just kind of figuring this out. I don't know where it's going to go. This is a long-winded way of saying it's not as if we were coming from a place that was perfect before these changes.
I will throw out there, the number 800 has been thrown around a lot. My understanding is a good deal of those 800 were kids actually returned to their schools and they never properly got removed from the portal, but
it's probably more like 500.
Yeah. But still 500 is too many, even if that's what the real number is. Mm-hmm. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We will be back in just a few weeks with the beginning of our preseason previews and tons of content coming. The season is coming. But for now, on behalf of John Titel, David Griggs, John Stalica down below me, Joby Fortson and Mike Cha to his sides, Dave Dorman all the way down, David Dorman down the bottom row, up here in the top center, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon. And now I got to figure out how to stop the recording here.
Oh, I love that. We're still recording.
Oh, Rusty there?
We're waiting for Chad to figure out.
Okay, now we'll see you. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right.